Hey, business aficionados. Welcome to episode 57 of A Shot of Business Central and a Beer. I'm Michael, your business buddy. And right beside me is the man with the mic and a mission, the author of A Real Gem, Ken.
Cheers, everyone. I'm thrilled to be here as always, ready for a chat, maybe to share a beer nugget or two.
Oh, today's show is hotter than a summer barbecue, from the juiciest Business Central news to riding the AI roller coaster. We've got it all. But here's the kicker. Today, the spotlight is on Ken. Ken, our Business Central savant, has not only been our guiding light, but has also dipped his toes into the world of publishing. Yes, indeed. We're going to explore the ins and outs of his masterpiece, The Executive Guide to Implementing Accounting Software. So brace yourselves for wisdom tales and maybe a dash of Ken's humor.
Well, Michael, you know, they say a good story always has a twist. And today, it's the twist of me doing my best to be both host and guest. So grab your drinks, get comfy, and join us for an episode that not only educates, but brings you closer to Business Central Nirvana. Episode 57 of A Shot of Business Central and a Beer, where every sip is a step into the lively dance of business, is now.
Let's go!
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 57. We've got a lot in store for you today. Glad to be here with you today, Michael.
Glad to be with you as well.
So I went ahead and I picked up some new beer. I was looking for the right beer for today and leaning towards something traditional, and you mentioned that you want something different.
Crazier the better.
That's exactly what I think you said. So what we're drinking today is Donna's Pickle Beer.
And you know what? I just popped it open. I gave it a little smell. And this might sound crazy, but it reminds me of a baseball game, like a hot dog with pickles at a baseball game for some reason. Maybe because we talked about stats and baseball earlier.
Eat the two together. You eat the hot dog and then take a sip of beer.
Yeah.
So your brain's kind of putting those two things together.
Yeah, but I definitely smell pickles.
Definitely pickle flavor. I read there's pickle juice in it. It's not just like flavoring. It's pickle juice and beer in there.
I'm going to give it a quick sip.
You know, we don't have a lot of reviews, a lot of detailed information about it.
So the only background we really have is that, and here's what it says on the can. It says, Donna was backstage at the Garden eating pickles from a jar. In a flash of light, she was pushed on stage and kissed full on the mouth by a beer-drinking Mick Jagger. It was electric. No, not the kiss. Poor Mick. The taste in her mouth was electric with the beer and the pickles. So that night, Donna's Pickle Beer was born.
Yep. 4.4% ABV.
Yeah.
Looks kind of just like a regular lager, pilsner in color, like a light yellow, typical type, you know, lager type head on it.
I'll give Donna credit. This is one of the beers where it actually says it's a pickle beer and you can actually taste the pickle in it, right? Yeah. A lot of the beers say whatever it is, coffee and pineapple, and you get very subtle notes of that. But this one, you taste the pickle juice.
Yep. Yeah. I did see a thing. It says Donna's finest homemade brine with big, bright herbal and floral notes is integrated beautifully with an all-American lager and accentuated by Saaz and Hallertau Middle Froh hops. You'll relish every sip.
It's got to be the Saaz, Hallertau, and Middle Tone Frohs.
I guess. Or just the pickle juice.
Yeah. But you also mentioned earlier that it's interesting where it's produced out of Chicago, right? It's made in Chicago.
Yeah. It's made at a place called the Pilot Project Brewery. And I had not heard of this before, so I'm like, I checked it out. So what it is, it's a brewery incubator, tasting room and restaurant located in Chicago, Illinois, and also in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And it was launched as a collaborative place to help support brewers modeled after the music industry. Pilot serves as a launch pad for startup breweries, offering assistance with recipe R&D, production scaling, marketing, distribution, and more.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. I just want to say that I think it's kind of funny that, so Ken and I, we usually come in here and we're ready for the beer and we drink it. This time though, we both brought water bottles just in case the beer was going to be too much to handle.
Yeah. We'll see, you know, the true test is, will we crack another one?
Yeah. Open? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if it gets warm, it might scare me. We'll see.
Yeah. I think it's only going to get more pickly. The longer we go here, the warmer it gets.
All right. So coming up then, we're going to bring you the shot of Business Central. We get some Business Central news for you. I'm going to then interview Ken about his book, The Executive Guide to Implementing Accounting Software, over 100 ways to ensure the success of your project. And then we'll do a little bit of AI snack time, but yeah, most of it's going to be focused on Ken today, folks.
All right. Woohoo.
Ken, it's time for the shot of BC. And, you know, we've got some news, but last month we didn't dive into the news too much because we had a special guest, Jim Geo, and we spent a lot of time. So we really didn't get a chance to talk about the minor update 23.2. And I know that you'd like to mention a couple of things about it. So the floor is yours.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, 23.2. You know, it feels like for some reason to me, after just seeing all the updates coming out about environments being updated, that it's been over the course of several weeks that 23.2 is kind of being deployed across different environments. But I think everyone should probably, most people are probably updated at least 23.2 as of today. Really is just one platform update, 45 application updates, some localization updates for several different regions, many different regions. But in particular, I noticed a lot for the Czech version for some reason. Maybe they have some issues. And then also, I just want to point out there are feature changes that are being deployed as part of each of these minor updates. These were all updates that were included as part of 2023 Wave 2, and they're now being rolled out, right, over these minor releases. However, just so people aren't getting too upset, I looked through the list of what these particular new features are. Most of them are not things that most users need to be aware of, really. They're kind of the under the hood technical development service type things that don't affect everyday use.
So just some things that they basically needed to correct.
Yeah.
Well, then we have that in common with the minor update 23.3, because a lot of that is also as well technical. You know, I would mention that for some reason, the e-invoicing with NEM handle in Denmark isn't listed as a localization change. It was listed actually on the feature changes, and I'm not sure why.
Yeah.
So Microsoft, if you're listening.
It's a little weird. Yeah,
let us know. But other than that, it's, let's see if anything's notable. Maybe translatable Excel layouts. If you're into that, you can use the $2 sign tags in Excel for worksheet names, chart headers,
pivot. Maybe there's someone out there that's been really looking forward to this new feature that allows you to make use of static and runtime metadata in Excel layouts.
Right. But other than that, it's very technical for everything else. So what we'll do is we'll put links to everything in the show notes in case you want to read it and catch up on it. And then I'd like to mention one more quick thing coming up for Business Central before I pass it over here to Ken so he can go through his news. There is a virtual AI hackathon for all Business Central partners from February 20th to the 23rd. So if you're into AI, you know, if you want to see, I think what it is it's people who have developed AI things for Business Central. They might be showcasing what they've done. So check it out. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. And
yeah, that sounds pretty cool. I'm not a developer, but I wouldn't mind seeing some cool stuff, maybe see what people are doing.
Yeah, hopefully it's not too technical, but
yeah,
we'll see. What do you got, Ken?
Yeah, just a general kind of Business Central support type things that we did notice that in version, you know, the latest release, major release 23, that there were several changes to the consolidations functionality. So if you're running multiple companies and you're consolidating your financial data into a consolidation company, just maybe you've already seen this, or but if not, be aware there are some just changes to how you click through that process to get that done. The only other thing was, and I think it was version 23 originally came out, there was kind of some weird things happening with the search function on list pages, where you type something in and kind of the results would be funky, inflate, like kind of change and act weird.
Some sort of glitch.
Yeah, I think it's been resolved in one of the either 23.2 or 3. I think 22.2 kind of resolved that. I haven't heard of any issues recently.
Yeah, neither have I. So yeah, I think it's been resolved.
Yep. Also, I just want to kind of touch on, you know, it's January now. People are hopefully start planning on deciding whether or not they want to attend any user conferences during 2024. The first big one that's coming out in May 13th through the 16th is DynamicsCon Live 2024 in Denver, Colorado at the Denver Marriott Tech Center. I just saw an update. They're expecting huge growth over last year's numbers, possibly over 2,000 attendees this year. That's a 3-day multi-track event focused on GP, Power Platform, and as well as Business Central, CE, and Finance and Supply Chain.
I think that's huge growth, right? Because I think last year, maybe 600 or 700.
Yeah, maybe, right.
Over doubling.
Correct. Yeah, definitely more than doubling. And I think it more than doubled the year before that. Gotcha. I am attending. It'll be my third one that I've gone to. The previous two have been very well done. Nice conferences, well orchestrated by the team that puts it on. I expect another good conference this year. And also, I am going to be leading two sessions, Business Central sessions. One is called Feast on the Cornucopia of BC Reporting Options.
Nice.
So we're going to just talk about all of the different ways that you can now pull data out of Business Central to manipulate it and do reporting, whatever you need to do, which it's we've come a long way since the old days of NAV. So I'll just say that. And then the second session that I'm leading is called Field Monitoring, the New and Improved Change Log. So we're just going to dive into kind of what is change log, and then what is this new field monitoring feature, compare and contrast, and explain what you can do with it and what it's designed for.
Sounds like really good sessions. I'm sure that your sessions will be highly attended because they always are. So everybody listening, check it out. Ken puts on some great presentations.
Try to have some fun. I'm not sure if I'm legally allowed to do so. Maybe we'll be handing out free beer samples.
Legally allowed to do so. Yeah. You might be. Nice. Anything else?
Yeah, for Business Central partners out there, you know, I think recently Microsoft announced that they are going to create a new path for Business Central partners to become to achieve the Business Applications Solution Partner designation, which offers benefits to partners and shows their skill with implementing Business Central and supporting Business Central. I just went out there, went on to the skilling area and looked at the advanced certifications. It's still not available as of this point. I'm not sure exactly when, maybe March or April is when this is supposed to come out. But basically what it's supposed to do is allow, they're going to add a new advanced certification for Business Central development, which that combined with the functional consultant Business Central certification that exists, you get a certain number of people with those, both of those, and then you achieve the advanced certification. So
are you sold on the new certification, new certifications, I guess, the way it is? Or do you prefer the old way where it was gold, silver?
I think if they get a path for Business Central partners, keep it on, right? I'm looking at everything through my Business Central glasses. Yeah. So once there is a path for Business Central partners to achieve a partner solution designation, then I'll be a fan of it.
As long as it doesn't involve enterprise.
Yeah. I mean, do I have to pass some F&O exams to become a Business Central right? To achieve a certification, it's not really fair. So
not at all.
I think once they fix that, I will be, it is something that it is going to be much more closely monitored, and there's calculations based on number of customers and growth and things like
that. I'd be curious to talk to some customers to see what they actually think of it. If it's high on their priority list of when they're choosing a Microsoft partner, I don't know.
My guess is that there may be some customers that look at that, but the vast majority have no idea.
Right. It's just a connection you build through the process. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You meet some people at a partner. They seem like they know what they're saying.
Yeah.
You get comfortable. Yeah. I think they can help me.
Right.
It's probably the most part.
Interesting.
Yep. That's
it, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we should take a couple more swings of this pineapple beer, and then we'll jump into
pickle beer.
Or yeah, what did I say? Pineapple? Pickle beer. And then we'll jump into interviewing Ken. So stick around, everybody. We are back for, well, I guess I will call it a special segment. We're going to be talking about the Executive Guide to Implementing Accounting Software. Over 100 ways to ensure the success of your project book, which was written in 2007 by this guy that I know. By Mr. Ken Sebahar. So, all right, Ken, today's your day. We want to talk about this book because Ken and I were trying to figure out a way to start talking about implementation on the podcast. And, you know, it's if you're not a Business Central connoisseur or whatnot, right? If you talk about implementation, it might, I don't want to say bore you, but it might not hold your interest as well. So we're trying to figure out a way to introduce implementation. And Ken, you know, was talking about, oh, I wrote this book. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember. So It's a great way to introduce implementation to everybody, and a great way to break it into our podcast. But, you know, Ken, tell us a little bit about who you are for the people who might know. I know a lot of people follow the podcast, but they might not know your background, how you got started.
Sure.
You know, maybe even what led you to write this book.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yeah, and thanks for giving us the opportunity to talk about this. It's you know, I haven't really focused too much on this in several years, right? Or talked about it much, so this is fun. So I graduated. I have an accounting degree, accounting background. I went to go work almost coincidentally at a company that developed and sold project accounting software. And I was just doing accounting there. I was the accounting manager. And so just doing your day-to-day accounting tasks. But the uniqueness was that I was using the software that they developed. So, and I was actually like the guinea pig, you know, the alpha test site. So when they created a new version or a new feature, I would be the first person to use it in the real world. And so I started working with the, you know, developers and some of the feature, you know, architects, software architects and stuff. And long story short, after a little while, I started doing consulting because I knew the software. So I'm going out, I started doing training and just helping support some of the end users on the software. And, you know, flash forward, eventually we hired a new accounting manager so that I could start doing implementation full time. After about 10 years of implementing ERP and accounting software, I realized that I tried to figure out, right? It's like the constant battle of figuring out what is it that makes some projects go so well and other projects don't. Right? Is it that I decided to try on this project, but I decided I don't really feel like trying on this other project where one goes really well and one doesn't go well?
Yeah.
And so it was a constant battle to try to figure out what is it that gives companies the greatest chances of success of implementing their software. So I just started writing down things in Excel and creating a list And what I realized is that after a while that I had quite a few tips and tricks and things that made it kind of told a story.
Yeah.
And the story that it told was that it really didn't have much to do with me as an implementer, right? As a project manager and a software implementer. It had to do with the organization at which I was implementing the accounting software.
Yeah.
Right. It was less about me. It was more about them. And specifically, it was the company and the people at the company deciding that they're taking ownership of the software that they just bought or now subscribe to, right? But it's that they said, hey, we're buying this new ERP software and it's our software. We are responsible for learning how it works, implementing it, training our users, and then running it and managing it over the long run. That was the differentiator.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think, what the overlying message is that if you really want to be successful, you need to take ownership. This is your software. It's not the implementer software. It's not the company that developed it. It's not their software.
Yeah.
You know, they will help you, but you are responsible for owning it and getting it done.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny, actually, funny that you mentioned it, because throughout your book, you mentioned numerous times that it's the resellers or implementators' job to basically pass along knowledge to the customer. I was wondering if you know what your experience has been in the past. Do you think customers agree with that, or do they most likely think, hey, especially before subscription, I'm paying you however much money, I want you to implement this software, get it done, and not, you know, give me knowledge about it. It's your job to be knowledgeable. Has that been your experience with a lot of them in the past, or?
Well, you mean like, on a percentage, what I've seen is that the ones that understand that are the ones that are going to be more successful. More
successful, yeah.
Right. And here's the thing. If you look at an X and Y axis, right? So, and you have the strength of the organization and their people on one axis, and the strength of the implementer or implementation team on the other axis. Obviously, if you have a strong organization and a strong implementer, you have a high degree of success, chance of success. If you have a poor organization and a poor implementer, you're going to not have a great chance of success. But what's interesting, and this is kind of like how I would visualize it, if you have a strong organization but a poor implementer, that organization still has a good degree of chance of success.
So they got a shot.
Versus the poor organization or weaker organization with a strong implementer.
Yeah.
Has a low chance of success.
So what you're saying is, right, better to have a weak implementer, thank you, and a strong organization willing to take ownership of it,
right,
as opposed to a really good implementer and a weak organization doesn't take ownership.
Correct, because that implementer is there on a temporary basis.
Right.
They're there to help facilitate this implementation, give them support and guidance and training where they need it. And if they're strong enough organizationally and they have a good team in place, they'll be able to understand where the implementer's maybe deficiencies are or where they're not strong and overcome that somehow by bringing in someone else or learning it and making, and then being able in a position to make the decisions on their own instead of relying on the implementer. I think they can overcome that. And that's what leads me to, that's what, if you kind of put that picture together with these four quadrants, it leads me to believe that it's really the strength of the organization, their dedication to the project and ownership of the software, that is the most important factor.
Gotcha. No, that makes a lot of sense. So, well, all right. So let's dive in a little bit here into the book and talk about some of the things that I noticed.
Yeah.
One of my notes.
Yeah. So, I mean, real quickly, just before you mentioned, let's get into the sections of the book. So just real quickly, how I decided to write this is it's not written in a traditional like book format, right? Where pages and pages and pages of just text and text.
Completely
cool. And I'll tell you why. I started writing a traditional book. I couldn't even read it myself. It was so boring. And I believe that people generally, they're too busy or they don't like to read. So to get through a 200, 300 page book on software implementation was just a non-starter. And I'm like, I got to change this up. How can I change this up to make this so that people will look at it, they'll read it? So I created it in sections. And those sections kind of follow the phases of a software implementation.
Yep.
From software evaluation, selecting modules, working with the software vendor, implementation planning, software design, training, data conversion, and deployment. And then each topic is one sentence in bold, which summarizes the concept, mm-hmm. and then a paragraph or two, diving into a little bit more detail. But it's very high level. Let's call it executive guide, because it's something that I don't know how long you read it years ago.
Mm-hmm.
How long, right? It's a few hours.
Yeah, right. If you're taking a flight somewhere, read it on the plane. It's a couple hours long. Yeah,
right. And that's by design. It's so that people won't have the excuse, hey, I'm in this phase of my project. Oh, here's 10 topics, 10 things that I can do to be successful.
Yeah.
And I can look at it in about 15 minutes.
So. No, yeah, it's and you know what else is surprising to me about the book? So I've actually read it twice now. I would say 90% of everything in this book from 2007 still applies to 2024.
Yeah.
Maybe even more than 90%, 95% of it. So it's stood up to the test of time, Ken.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So in the first section of the book, you know, you list some basic startup steps, when to, you know, to follow when you're evaluating the software. So you list the steps as basically defining the project vision, setting the budget, you know, seeing some demonstrations, and then, you know, asking the vendor for references. I'm curious, now that it's been 17 years since you wrote the book, would you say those steps still apply? Would you like to add anything to those steps, or would you like to take anything away from those evaluation steps?
Yeah, I think generally speaking, those same steps apply, right? You have to have a vision for the project. What are your primary goals? What's your budget? Is that budget realistic, right? Those things are all there. What's changed a little bit in 15 years is the availability of online videos, right? Demonstrating the functionality of different ERP solutions, as well as even free trials.
Yeah.
Where you can set it up yourself and look at it and see how it works. I don't recommend that, because you do need to be trained on how things work, especially if you're doing complex ERP with manufacturing, purchase planning, inventory, warehouse, that type of stuff. So, I think it's pretty much the same.
Now, 17 years ago, if somebody wanted to, obviously you could demo the software for them, but was there anything of like setting up a virtual sandbox on a server or something like that to let somebody get in and just mess around with it?
I mean, years
were you able to put a sandbox in somebody's server that
15 years ago, that was the exception. So what that meant was, right, you, if it was a, you know, you could negotiate maybe and do like a install it and do a free 90-day trial of some sort or whatever. But that was the exception. In the old world, you had a buyer, someone who's evaluating ERP systems, had to come up with this long 300 list, you know, long task list long of requirements. And they had to go through those one by one and make sure that the new software could accomplish that, because they were expected to hand over a check for $50,000 or $100,000. And once that check clears, right?
Yeah, they want it all.
They're stuck with that software. So there was huge risk. So they really had to vet the software and the implementer really well. Today with subscription, you're with Business Central. Let's focus on Business Central, please. You're committing to like $70 for 1 month for a subscription to get started. Now, you might decide to go longer than that, maybe add a couple more users and actually start the implementation and actually see those key things working with your data as you've set up your customers and items and so on. So there's that risk is completely gone away.
Right.
There's very little to no risk now with making sure that from a high level, this software is going to meet your needs. And then dive deep as you kick off the implementation, set some milestones to make decision points of how are things going? Are we still on track? Is this still the software for us?
Yeah. Right. So you mentioned back then people would create a list of whatever 100, 200, 300 features that they want.
Yeah.
In your book, you know, you talk about listing no more than 10 essential must-haves and then having a secondary wish list of things that you'd like, but are really, really not too essential for what you're doing.
Right.
So my question is, you know, ERP has come a long way since 2007. I'm sure people still have must-haves that they want, but are they really still creating these lists, or are they assuming that because ERP is so advanced that every feature they have is automatically included within the ERP?
Yes, they are assuming that.
Gotcha.
And they are now coming in with much shorter lists, generally speaking. That's not the best approach because every ERP doesn't do everything.
Right.
So there's an issue there. But yeah, generally speaking, most companies we see come in and they're like, here is our pain point. Right? We're a distributor and we have a huge volume of EDI. And today our software doesn't support EDI. We need it to be fully integrated within our system. And that's a key requirement. You know, gotcha. And then some of the little things like how a credit hold gets handled, how do I have access to the visibility of my on-hand inventory? Those things become less important than those major requirements, you know, core.
Do you think we're moving towards where, you know, it almost seems like, right? I mean, there was big distinguishing factors, let's say 17 years ago when you wrote this book, probably in 2007, between your top five ERP softwares. But I think as we're moving more and more down the line, everything seems to be encompassing more and more features. Do you think in 10 years, you're going to be able to distinguish between softwares? Or are they going to all have the same capabilities and you're just going to buy whichever one you like?
Well, I think we're already, like even in the Microsoft ecosphere, we're getting the finance and supply chain, AX, F&O, I don't know, whatever they call that product now. Right, Dynamics 365, that product and Business Central are moving closer and closer together, right? Business Central scaling up higher and higher. They're adding more and more features and integration with all the other Office and Microsoft products, AI. So just in the Microsoft world, those are becoming a little bit indistinguishable to a certain degree, look and feel.
Yeah.
There's still going to be differences out there. It's hard to say, but I think
a lot of the base software is going to be close to the same.
Yeah.
But I think all the extensions and apps that you can add on that, I think that's where
the ecosystem,
correct. Yeah.
If you will.
All right. So I found this interesting. This might be one of the biggest differences in your book. You mentioned the 1-to-1 ratio. And for people usually in the business, they understand that, you know, for every dollar spent on software licensing, you're going to effectively, you would have had to have spent the same thing on support and licensing, maintenance, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But now with the subscription model, is there still a 1-to-1 ratio or is there something else or is that just be out of the window?
Yeah. Officially, no, there's not a 1-to-1 ratio because if I have a 10 user Business Central premium license, $100 per license, that's $1,000 a month. Well, it's going to cost a lot more in implementation and consulting services than $1,000 to get that up and running.
Yeah.
Right. So how can you So one way that you can attempt to still come up with this, and this is, by the way, just a general rule of thumb, this 1-to-1 ratio, that's for simple financials, kind of basic distribution. Right. If you get into manufacturing or service or other things, it could get up to size 4-to-1 in terms of implementation services to licensing cost. But you can still do this rule of thumb if you take your monthly subscription, multiply that by 24 or 2 years. So in my example, we had 10 users for $100, so $1,000 a month. So $24,000 is in terms of licensing subscription. So plan on at least $24,000 of implementation expenses associated with your, so having a consultant help you with understanding how should the system be set up and configured, converting your data, helping you cut over and go live and support your users, training, right?
Yeah.
So that's still kind of a way that you can translate the old upfront licensing into a subscription.
No, that makes sense. It's definitely hard to put a ratio on subscription based. All right. Let's see what else I got here for you. So yeah, you throughout your entire book, you seem to allude to a lot to 3 years, right? 3 years for financing, 3 years for investment summary, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So my question to you is, do you still think companies should look at things through a 3-year window, or is that number decreased to maybe 2 years, like you were mentioning with the the ratio, or should it be more?
I would say actually it's irrelevant.
knock on your book.
Yeah. Cross out that page. I would say it's actually less relevant. And the reason a 3-year term is kind of what I use is because that's kind of the typical upgrade cycle, both in terms of hardware, new servers. Yeah, there's a lot of people have 3-year leases on equipment, or that's how often a company may upgrade from their current version to the next version. So if you think about it, you're going to have to, if you buy the software, implement it today and get it up and running, in about 3 years, you're going to potentially need to think about investing in an upgrade project and new hardware.
Yeah.
Or new licensing or whatever it might be. Now, with the cloud hosted solutions, that cycle is gone.
Absolutely.
Right? It's monthly. You're every month. Microsoft is, let's stick with Business Central. They're updating Business Central once a month. You're staying current. There is no upgrade cycle. Yeah. You're just continuously on the latest and greatest version. And there's no hardware.
Right. Would 2007 Ken believe that in 2024 or 2023 and 2024, that the upgrade cycle would be completely gone and there's no more hardware? Or would 2007 Ken would have said, no, it's impossible. No way.
No, I think so. Yeah. I think I would have because, QuickBooks Online has been around for a while. Now, granted, it's pretty basic functionality, but they managed to do it. So I think it was just a matter of larger organizations being comfortable with the consistency and availability, right, of having that system hosted somewhere else.
Yeah.
I think a lot has
internet
connectivity, internet speed.
Yeah.
Right. And just cloud hosting and Microsoft, all of that's evolved significantly. 15 years ago, I personally at a mid-sized company that does manufacturing, I would not have been comfortable relying on my ERP sitting somewhere on a server outside my building.
Right. I think 2007 was that the year the iPhone was released? iPhone 1 maybe? So yeah.
But nowadays, it's been a long time coming. ERP has actually been one of the slowest adopters of cloud technology. If you look at all the different types of apps that have been available on cloud as cloud apps.
Oh yeah.
ERP and in mid-sized organizations has been,
I think it's a lot because of complexity, what it takes to run the ERP online.
Yeah.
All right, let's get back to the number three. This question to me is kind of interesting. You talk, about contacting a minimum of 3 references supplied by the vendor. So the question is, do you still believe this is important? And I, well, first, let me tell you, I've never understood the concept of me giving references to somebody. You want me to waste my time contacting three people you handpicked for me to talk to. But that's a high level overview, so to speak, right? If it's ERP, yeah. I guess you could dive in more about processes and how you use things and whatnot.
Right. No, listen, I agree with you. In general, references are not nearly as valuable as people believe they are. Because to your point, they've handpicked who they're going to let you talk to, right? With that said, like, so Business Central, right? If I'm buying business, if I'm going to be buying Business Central and implementing it, I'm much less concerned about the reference check in terms of, hey, does this software work?
Exactly. Right?
Because it's globally used. It's been deployed for years and years.
Right, it comes from a reputable company.
Millions of people using it, right? So I'm less concerned about that. But this book was not written only for Business Central, right? It could be that someone's looking at an ERP solution written by some company out in, you know, Bufu, location. And they have very few customers.
Right.
And it doesn't work really well, but they think it might, right? So that case, you want to vet, does the software work for you, blah, 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 what issues you have. But the other type of reference would be on the implementer. Like if you're looking for references to say, I want to talk about the implementation. How was the implementation team? Did they give you help? Did they support you? Were they available for you? If you had any customizations, did they give you multiple design options?
Yeah.
That type of thing is what you're vetting more is the team.
Right. Yeah. All right. Let's move down to, or move up or down, whatever you want to call it, to the module section. So, in this section, it was interesting to see that you chose to talk about document-related modules for ERP within the module section. Specifically, you mentioned document formatting and document imaging solutions. And as I was reading this, I was curious to know if you were to rewrite this book today, would document modules make the cut? Is that something everybody just believes is, I don't know, standard and everybody knows how to...
Like document management?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Probably more so.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, everyone wants document management to be integrated with the ERP. So I can pull up a customer's contract from a customer record or see a signed delivery authorization on a sales shipment, right? And those documents, linking and tying documents together, scanning in documents to auto attach them to the appropriate record in the system.
So do people automatically assume, though, that is just there and easy to use or is it something?
I don't think people assume it's there. They'll ask like, oh, is there built-in document management options? And of course, you know, with Business Central, there are document attachments that are there and links that you can add, but there are also a number of apps right out there that do a really good job with this for some of the advanced functionality, OCR and whatnot.
All right. Speaking of modules, in 2007, it seems that modules and for ERP was more like a la carte. You got to pick specifically everything that you wanted. Today, where it's more the out of the box functionality, it's pretty much all included. Was it easier to implement it when they were separate modules in the past, or is it easier now? Because I'm thinking my reasoning is maybe in the past you can pick and choose what you want, whereas today, you know, it has everything and customers like, I want this now, do this. It has this. Why can't we do that?
From an implementation standpoint, today it's significantly easier.
Really?
Because generally, you know that all of the features and functionality are available, right? With Business Central, you have Essentials and Premium. Mm-hmm. Premium just adds the manufacturing and service management modules. But from in the old world, it could be like, well, are you implementing, do you have access to the warehouse features? Do you have access to the CRM functionality? And as an implementer, you had to constantly be aware of what did this customer purchase? Do they even have access to this? If someone mentions they'd like to use it, now you generally know that everything is there available for the most part with the premium exceptions.
Understood. In this section, you also mentioned that if a company has under 100 employees, they should outsource payroll. Do you think that holds true today? Or is that not, would you change that number?
I would say I would change it.
Yeah. Higher or lower?
Always outsource payroll.
Always.
You know, and again, from a Business Central standpoint, small to mid-sized organizations, there's so much complexity involved with payroll and all of the filing requirements and withholding rules. You've got garnishments, all of this stuff. Like, it's so hard to keep track of everything and keep current on everything and update withholding rates and things like
that. So you basically need an internal team if...
Yeah, if you want to do payroll in-house. So from a cost-benefit standpoint, a liability standpoint, even a data security standpoint, I think it makes sense to outsource. Do you really want all of your payroll data sitting inside your Business Central environment where you have maybe 50 users from the warehouse to sales to purchasing in there?
Yeah.
That can potentially, if there's a mishap with permissions, somehow some data gets exposed.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of reasons why I'm a fan of outsourcing payroll. There are some apps for Business Central, but yeah, generally speaking, I would say always outsource payroll. Unless you're an enterprise, a huge enterprise company with a huge payroll department.
Right. Yeah.
That might make
sense. It makes sense. All right. I want to talk a little bit about the working with the software vendor section. And this kind of struck me as interesting. You mentioned the importance of over communicating, right? So can you talk a little bit about this? I tend to think as time goes on, people want to communicate less and less, especially in today's world. Mm-hmm. Or if they do want to communicate, it's through a means of like email or something, no face-to-face or phone or whatnot. Do you think over communicating is still important? Would you recommend it or what?
Absolutely. Yeah. This is, and what you say is true. People are interested in direct communication less and less. Send me an email, send me a text, right? I don't want to meet face-to-face,
right?
Or even virtually face-to-face. However, an ERP implementation project is a significant undertaking with literally thousands or maybe tens of thousands of decisions that have to be made. And it is critical that everyone communicate well and stay on the same page to make sure that you have a successful project.
So everybody communicate, the more the barrier. All right, let's jump to some implementation planning. I know that we're going pretty long here. So you mentioned that if a vendor is assisting with the implementation, you should require that that vendor demonstrate to you a proven implementation methodology. Let's just say it that way. Okay. Methodology. Yeah. Let's put it. So my question to you is, what do you mean by implementation
methodology?
Thank you. Methodology. And what should be included within one?
Yeah. So, I mean, simply put, what you're asking, and when big words, right? Implementation methodology.
Yeah. Sesquipedalian.
What you're asking is, how are you guys going to help us get this project done?
Right.
Right. So what are the key tasks that have to be done, the steps, the order of those steps that those should be done optimally, the milestones, key, right, check-in points to see are we on track or not? How are they going to cut over the data from the old system to the new system? And then how are they going to train your users? How are they going to be available for support over the first few weeks after you go live?
Yeah.
All of that is the methodology, and it's the approach they take. I would tell you, like, what, you know, a common approach we take is crawl, walk, run. Everyone kind of understands that, right? Let's not overbuild to start. We want to get you in the system, using the system as is, if possible. Now, it may not be possible, so we may have to do some customizations or add some apps or whatever it is. But still, the mindset is we're not going to get everything done, but we want to get you in there learning the system, using it to get some return on your investment.
Mm-hmm.
And also, so because then you become a stronger user and you're in a better position to understand what you may need or not need. Maybe something you thought was really important, once you start using it, you're like, oh, you know what? We really don't even need that anymore. So that's a methodology.
Yeah. So just a couple follow-up questions. Should that be something that's documented and given to a customer, or is that just something that you guys talk about with the implementation team and the customer?
Yeah, no, there should be some
form of documentation.
Formal documentation, okay. Diagrams, high-level documents that explain, at least at a high level, the key steps and phases that you're going to go through.
So you said crawl, walk, run. I'm curious to know if back in 2007, that was kind of the same thing, same approach taken maybe with different phases of an implementation. Maybe phase one was the crawl phase, as opposed to with the key user trainings. I mean, is that same approach?
Same crawl, approach. Walk, yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. That hasn't really changed. And really what's, you know, when you say crawl, walk, run, in an ERP system, right? There's especially Business Central, you have all of these integrated modules. It becomes very difficult to do, like, let's only do financials first, and then we'll do inventory, and then we'll do manufacturing.
Right.
That becomes difficult. So you're better off getting all of the system deployed. So from a horizontal perspective, but know that all those bells and whistles that you want to be there aren't going to be there on day one. Maybe you're going to have to enter some things manually that will eventually be automated.
Right.
Maybe you're going to have to run this report three times instead of one time because that custom version of that report hasn't been developed yet. So those are some of the things that we're saying is get in there, start using it broadly.
Yeah.
But then know that we're going to add some features, functionality, apps, customizations down the road over time to continue to improve the efficiency.
So in your book, you mentioned that it usually takes 4 to 6 months to implement accounting/ERP software in 2007. Is that about the same for today? Is it sped up or is it slowed down?
Generally speaking, same.
About the same.
You know, you can see quicker, but some take longer. But generally the same. The only real difference is the first phase of the project, which is getting the software initially installed and configured. That can be done much more quickly, right? A couple days instead of a couple weeks or even longer typically, because you don't have to order a server, wait for the server to get here, install the software, deploy it, install the client everywhere, and get everything hooked up. So, but beyond getting the software installed and configured, that first phase is much faster now. After that, similar.
Nice. All right, let's move to the software design section. You wrote, the only time a modification to the new software is warranted during the implementation project is when the standard software prevents you from completing a required task. This guideline is critical to managing the implementation budget and timeline. In cases when you cannot complete a key task without modification, attempt to use a temporary workaround to accomplish the task until users can become more familiar with the software. My question is that, given the different levels of modifications with ERP, do you still agree with your sentence, in cases when you cannot complete a key task without modification, attempt to use a temporary workaround to accomplish the task until users can become more familiar with the software?
Yes, and even more so.
Even more so.
Now, the good news is that overall, users seem to be much more willing to use the system as is versus 15 years ago. Maybe it's due to the fact that it's like a cloud-based app. They're better familiarity with technology, or maybe due to previous negative experiences where they had to work in a heavily customized solution that no one knew how it worked, right? I would say that that's the good news, is we're seeing less and less customization requests.
Yeah. Is it easier to customize ERP, let's just say Business Central today, as opposed to NAV in 2007?
Absolutely. Sure, because now it's extensions, right? So you can install an extension and you can just as easily uninstall an extension, right? So in the old days.
You still stand by the sentence,
use it as is.
Yeah.
Even if it takes you a couple extra clicks.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And here's.
Well, I think I'm more interested with use a temporary workaround. Do you think it's more beneficial to waste time on a workaround or to install?
In the short term, it's worth it.
Yeah.
For sure. That gets into the overbuilding thing. You cannot expect on day one, it's going to have everything you need for the next 10 years or 20 years, right? It's crawl, walk, run. It's let's use it. You may find that that workaround isn't really that hard. And because you have other time freed up, because other things are easier, now doing that, it takes you the same amount of time, but it's not a problem anymore.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. All right. So I guess my final question to you would be, if you looking back on this book, is there something you wish you would have added to it? Or if you were to rewrite it, is there something you'd like to change off the top of your head? I mean, is there anything that you thought maybe you left out of the book when you wrote it?
It's an excellent question. And
you got to circle back.
I'm going to circle back on that. All right. I actually, what I'm planning on doing per an idea that I got from a great guy I know is to take this content and actually republish it on Speaking Business Central.
Nice.
So that will provide me with an opportunity to review each one of these 100 tips and tricks. And evaluate, does that still make sense? What should I change or what's not in here that I should add?
So we can look forward to a volume 2.
You got it, right? Every 16 years, whether it needs it or not.
All right. Well, Ken, I appreciate you taking the time to answer some of my boring questions. I know we spent a lot of time on it, but I think it's really beneficial to the people listening. And, where can they find your book if they want to buy it?
Amazon.
It's on Amazon. So it's called The Executive Guide to Implementing Accounting Software, Over 100 Ways to Ensure the Success of Your Project by Ken E. Sebahar.
Yep. And if I, maybe I'll get enough, to go out to pick up a pizza and a couple beers.
I'll tell you what, sounds like a good session to be had at one of these community events.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
All right. Next up, we got AI snack time. Talking about a little bit of the latest AI news. So talk to everybody then.
All right. Well, I'll tell you, Michael, after that great discussion about implementing accounting software, I'm ready for a snack and to talk some AI. So we got some Dots pretzels here, the old go-to snack here, just so darn tasty. So we're going to enjoy some pretzels and some beer and talk a little bit of AI. So what do you got in the news for us?
All right. So what I got, let's see. So popular news, I know what you're going to talk about. So OpenAI, which is funded by Microsoft, and I don't even know, it might be owned by Microsoft, maybe not owned by Microsoft, but funded by.
It's like a weird.
Yeah, so but they have a relationship, whatever. There. Yeah. They launched a GPT store for custom AI assistants. So this is where people are creating AI assistants for things like personal trail recommendations from AllTrails, searching academic papers with consensus. And it's really cool. You go on there and it's all these things everybody's created. And if you had the idea, somebody might have had the idea to create an AI bot that'll search, I don't know, Michael Jordan's stats from where he shot on the floor in 92, 93 for something. I don't know. But you can, link with these store products and have some fun, I guess. All right. I came across a genius AI product as well. It is the world's first smart basketball hoop by Hoop, H-U-U-P-E. we talked about this earlier. So it's basically the backboard for the basketball net is a smart screen, right? And you can track your basketball data like field goals made, percentages, whatever it may be. On the backboard, you can have a coach do a virtual basketball workout with you to where they're watching you shoot and whatnot. They also have virtual workout programs. worldwide competitions. You can play games with your friends. So, you know, you shoot like horse, then it links with the other person's smart board. And also it uses AI to analyze and track your shots. So, you know, if you're really into basketball for AI, it's pretty cool. I mean, I know I don't look like it, but I played basketball pretty much like every day of my life, among other sports. So when I was younger, I would have loved it.
Yeah, I'm looking at some pictures right now online, and it's basically like picture a rectangular, you know, backboard.
Yeah.
With a giant flat screen TV built into it.
Right. Yeah. And when you're not using the flat screen or whatever, you can change it to have the backboard square outline and everything. So it's different.
Yeah, it looks like you said, I see some pictures where it looks like there's like maybe an instructor offering lessons.
Yeah, analyzing your shot or whatever. Yeah, as you're going through.
I don't know if it's live or if it's like a video, but maybe you can sign up for like video training classes or something live, and it'll show you some techniques and things like that.
So yeah, that's my Genius AI product of the month. And then for Microsoft, there wasn't really too much new news. I mean, I know that for Business Central, Copilot Chat is soon to be released, hopefully within the next month or two. Everybody keeps talking about it. But I think Kenny has some Microsoft news for AI.
Yeah, just one announcement is that, Microsoft has been talking about Copilot, right? Announcements about Copilot for this and for that. And what they just announced was that Copilot is now generally available for Microsoft 365 through cloud solution providers or partners. And the biggest thing is they've taken away there was kind of like a preview they were doing, or it was only available for organizations or minimum of 300 users. Yeah. And they've kind of removed that minimum seat purchase. So now anyone that has Office 365 E3 or E5 can now purchase Copilot for Microsoft 365.
Very nice. So speaking along that, on January 15th, Microsoft also announced the availability of Copilot Pro, so this is separate from Office 365, to where you can just buy Copilot by itself. But it's going to give you access to Word, PowerPoint, and all those type of things. But what's unique about this is it's going to have the ability to build your own Copilot GPT, a customized Copilot tailored for a specific topic. And you can do this in Microsoft's new Copilot GPT Builder that is coming soon. And they claim that you'd be able to do this with just a simple set of prompts. For a normal guy like me, I don't know, let's hope so, right? I can get in or maybe try it out. But I remember the days when they said that Power Apps was pretty simple and anybody could build, you know, apps really easy for whatever. So we'll see. I think our definitions are different on what's easy and what's not.
Yeah.
All right. So I think it's time to rate the beer, Ken.
I think so.
Want me to go first?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So I want to first start off by saying this beer was exactly what it's supposed to be. It is a pickle beer. The pickle flavor is there. It's pretty smooth. It has good carbonation, good color. I think what it really comes down to is whether or not you can handle that much pickle with what you're drinking. Like I was telling you, if you're one of these people where supposedly the day after you have a hangover, you drink pickle juice and you're fine, you can handle it. Me, I can't drink a bunch of pickle juice. So when this is cold and compared to when it was warm, it's, I don't want to say night and day, but, you know, maybe morning and dusk. You know what I mean? But one can is all I'm going with. I'm not going to have more than one. So I'm going to give it a healthy rating of 42
out of 100.
Yeah. Not to knock the company, though, right? Because it is exactly what it is. It's not like, you know, you're drinking a knockoff of Miller Lite or whatever, and it tastes shitty, you know, or tastes bad. Sorry.
It's your personal beer. Yeah. Your personal beer rating. Yeah.
But what about you, Ken?
Well, I'm right with you, right? It was I everything you said, right? It's a pickle beer. It's great. It's this, except for one thing. It's pickle beer.
Exactly.
So you said 42. I say 41.
Okay, nice. Perfect.
Not because I want to go one lower than you. I had 41 already written down, but that's pretty much the closest I think we've ever been. I don't know that we've ever had the same exact rating. No.
Well, we were both able to finish it, and I don't think either one of us wanted to crack open another one. Correct. So, all right, everybody. We appreciate you listening. Tune in next month. We'll be back. So also share the podcast with everybody and look forward to the show notes. Ken, take us home.
Bye-bye.
As we end today's podcast, we want to give a big thank you to everyone who listens, shares this podcast, and leaves us reviews. You've taken a good amount of your time out of your day, and we truly appreciate it. Thanks again. And don't be afraid to email us at marketing@solsyst.com. with your tips for the podcast, or maybe you'd even like to be a guest during an episode.